What's unique about him being a judge?
The last one.
The last one. So he's the last judge, but he was a prophet, which is kind of unique. Were any of the other judges prophets? Do Samson and all they did was judge. And what their point was, that all the other judges, what did most of the other judges, not all the other judges do besides what Samuel did?
Delivering from the Philistines.
They delivered from the Philistines or somebody else. They went out and tore up whoever was tearing them up, right? They either led Israel or they went in by themselves, Samson would have been by himself, and killed a bunch of people, relieved the oppression from all the other people, and the people temporarily came back to God. Samuel never did that either, did he? He brought people back to God a different way. So we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning, but I want to talk a little bit, why are we even talking about Samuel? Why do we even talk about some of the other judges? And that's kind of why we're talking about Samuel. He also has a unique position in the fact that he installed the second and the third king. I always consider God to be the first king of Israel, but he installed the second and the third king, right? Right? Saul and David. So Samuel has a big hand in the shaping of the nation for God. Huge hand in the shaping of the nation for God. Because whenever you talk to the Jews, they wanted somebody, when they wanted the Messiah to come, to relieve them from the oppression. It kind of sounds like what they're looking for from a judge. Who are they looking for? After who? What kind of person were they looking for?
King.
A king like?
The other nation.
Like David. They were looking for a king like David when the Messiah came, okay? So it kind of ties together. You can see a little bit of it, what I'm talking about. But Samuel has
a pivotal point in the history of God coming and ministering to his people and bringing them along the way he wants to bring them along. And his impact is a long time. Some of those judges that came lasted for about a year or something. And Samuel, his whole life, he had an impact. So he's a pretty significant person to study. I just want to talk about that because we really didn't talk about it much when we started the class. Well, yeah, they want to deliver, but by delivery.
God's trying to deliver them, but the point is they want it their way.
Yeah. Well, we want it that way too, don't we?
Right.
We want salvation, but we want it our way?
Like
yeah. Okay, Samuel is a boy. I hope my voice will hang in there this morning, since I got to do announcements too. But that will make the announcements shorter, which is probably nobody to complain about. Then the man Elkanah went up with all of his household. This is what we went through last week, to offer the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his pay vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, I will not go until the child is weaned. Then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord and stay there forever. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Remain until you have weaned him. Only the Lord may confirm his word. So the woman remained and nursed her son until she was weaned. So this is where we left off. So how old do you think he was? Two or three is probably the best bet. We don't know. I did pull something out. He was old enough to be weaned, obviously. But old enough. I pulled this out of Chronicles. This was when Hezekiah was restoring everything back in Israel at the time, and here it says that they brought children in, male children in, that were 3 years old and older. So that may have been it. That may have been the time generally. So two or three was probably how old he was. Can you imagine having a child, never had a child, entire life, been teased, been ridiculed, and now you've had this child, you've had him for 2-3 years, and now you're going to give him up forever.
She's a lady of the word.
She said she would do that. She's a lady of her word. She's honest. She has integrity. But that doesn't help your heart much, does it? Here's this little boy, and you've had him for 3 years, and you're going to give him up. Okay. Now, when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour and a jug of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, although the child was young. Then they slaughtered the bull and brought the boy to Eli. She said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. For this boy I prayed, and the Lord has given me my petition which I asked of him. So I have dedicated him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is dedicated to the Lord, and she worshiped the Lord there. So she does bring him. She's a person of her word. She has integrity. Who do you think slaughtered the bull? Side point. We don't know. Probably Elkanah, probably not Hannah. Do you think Eli remembered the incident last time? It's been 3 years, maybe 2 years.
If he didn't, she reminded him.
If she didn't know, yeah. Do you think it bothered her for the last 3 years that he said, hey, you're drunk, lady, get out of here and sober up? You think that bothered her a little bit? Because she reminded him. She says, remember last time I was here? I made the prayers? We don't know. Doesn't say whether he did or whether he didn't. What do you think Eli's response was? She walked up to this three-year-old and said, here, he's yours. I don't know. I don't know what they did. But I don't think this was necessarily normal for what was going on. This is Shiloh. This is where the tabernacle is right now until David moves it to Jerusalem. Okay, so this is where they worship. And Eli's out there in the temple. He sleeps in around the temple where it is. Pretty austere. Okay, they depend on everything for their living coming in from what's taken from people as they worship, basically. That's how they make their subsistence. So I'm not sure, you know, Eli's got two grown boys, so he's up there a ways, okay? And we're going to find out he's probably quite up there a ways as far as his age. And he's got a three-year-old or two-year-old. But he accepted him. He said, okay. He understood what she was saying. This is a fulfillment of something I asked for God. And he understood it was from God. Then Hannah prayed and said, my heart exalts in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth speaks boldly against my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is no one like the Lord. Indeed, there is no one besides you. Nor is there any rock like our God. Boast no more very proudly. Do not let arrogance come out of your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and with him actions are weighed. The bows of the many are shattered, but the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry cease to hunger. Even the barren gives birth to seven, but she who has many children languishes. So Hannah's giving a prayer now that she's given her son up, and God has answered her prayers. Because she didn't ask for anything more. Did she ask for any more children? No. She just asked for the one. What was her response to leaving her child at the temple? How would you characterize that?
She's putting her faith in God.
Putting her faith in God? Wait, he took care of her problem, didn't he? You heard her? It was pretty quick.
It was like a living sacrifice.
A living sacrifice. It was for her and for the child. for the people of Israel. Her praise was extreme to God, wasn't it? This was extreme praise to God. There's nothing in this prayer that says, I really wish I didn't have to give him up or anything like that. There is nothing like that in this prayer whatsoever.
It's rare for having somebody praise God like this.
It is, and we'll get to that, but you're right, it is. And there's some reasons probably for that. Continuing. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes poor and rich. He brings low. He also exalts. He raises the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with nobles and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he set the world on them. He keeps the feet of the godly ones, but the wicked ones are silenced in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. Those who contend with the Lord will be shattered. Against them he will thunder in the heavens. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth, and he will give strength to his king, and he will exalt the horn of his anointed. Then Elkanah went to his home in Ramah, but the boy ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest.
Doesn't that sound like David or Solomon?
It does. Do you see anything in that verse 10? The last part. He will give strength to his king, and he will exalt the horn of his anointed. Could be a prophecy. What's the main theme of her prayer? Okay, God's going to deliver him. There's a little bit of that in there, but there's an overall theme in what she said between the last page and this page. Huh? Yeah, that's a lot closer. Anybody else? Y'all awake? You want to get up and do jumping jacks?
The Lord providing and being in control of the goodness. This is all about him and what he provides, what he does, his care.
But he also lives the need and the ashes.
Yeah, there's a contrast through this whole prayer, isn't there? Yeah, it's a very, very, very strong prayer. Anybody else from this side?
This is very easy to do so
much. You mean aside from her son, she would give this child to the Lord?
Yeah, you know, there's nothing in there about the fact that she gave the child to the Lord in this whole prayer. She's talking about God, her God. I don't know that she's saying this out loud or whether her lips are moving again and somebody's saying, is she drunk? But this is her prayer that she has. What I got out of that was God's power is without bounds. And his devotion is unquestioned.
That God will bring up vessels for himself to bring praise. Seeing is one he brought up.
She always loved God. But you see the power throughout the prayer, don't you? As a main thing. Those that are high, he brings down. Those that are low, that nobody thinks anything, he brings up. His power is boundless. But he's devoted to us. Don't you see the devotion all the way through there to his people in that prayer? Those are kind of the two things that I pulled out of it, was you're devoted to us and your power is unbounded. And she's living, and Clayton alluded to it, she's living in an Israel right now that isn't following God, by and large. She's what?
Doesn't sound like she's talking to the Lord.
No, God's talking to her.
Like she's talking to someone else about her.
But it's a strong prayer. If you look, and Hannah prayed and said, so she's praying. Because these two slides are her prayer. So now we talk about the problems that they have at the temple. Now the sons of Eli were worthless men. They did not know the Lord and the custom of priests with the people. When any man was offering a sacrifice, the priest servant would come while the meat was boiling with a three-pronged fork in his hand. Then he would thrust in the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All the fork brought up, the priest would take it for himself. Thus they did in Shiloh to the Israelites who came there. So it was a custom. This is a custom that had come along in the priests. And we're talking about Eli. And this Doug talked about a little bit. And you saw these two boys that were there. His two sons. Phinehas and I forget what the other one was, name was, Hophni or something like that. They were worthless men. Those were the two sons he'd raised up. So do you think she questioned leaving Samuel with that man that had raised those two worthless sons? She knew. Believe me. She just wasn't the only one who knew. Everybody knew these two sons were worthless. Now, this is the normal practice, okay? She made a vow to God. So kind of go back and she says, I made a vow to God. And you alluded to it. Clayton alluded to it. Your faith, her faith in God said, I know this is going to turn out right. If I talk to somebody else, another mother, they're going to say, it's the wrong thing to do. Don't leave him with Eli. He already raised two rotten kids. Why would you leave him there? But she made a vow. She followed through on that. Is that practice described here? Do you think that's what the sons of Eli did? Did they follow the normal practice? It says, you know, I don't think they followed this one. They followed this one. Also, before they burned the fat, the priest's servant would come and say to the man who's sacrificing, give the priest meat for roasting, as he will not take the boiled meat from you, only raw. As the man said to him, they must really, surely burn the fat first, and then take as much as you desire. They would say, no, but you shall give it to me now, and if not, I will take it by force. Thus the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for the men despised the offering of the Lord. What do they do?
According to the old law, there was a very specific way that as part of the stuff that was sacrificed, the priests were supposed to get a portion of it. There's a very specific way it was supposed mm-hmm. to be done and all that. And it's outlined here in Leviticus 7, just read through it. So clearly they were just, I'm hungry now.
Yeah. Or I want this, you know. I don't want any boiled meat. I want the best piece.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to just get something randomly in there I can get on a fork. I want the prime cut. Okay? They took the choicest part and then gave the rest, the scrap, to God.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing.
So now you can see it from God's point of view.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
it is. How would you describe these two guys? Huh? Arrogant? Brats? Spoiled brats? Punks?
They really think they got it made. They're kind of like they can run but can't hide.
They kind of remind me of the first generation of Pharisees.
Somewhat, yeah. I can do no wrong in my own eyes. I'm. What's it? Large and in charge. I call them bullies. He had a pair of sons who were bullies. So, people are here. They don't have a king. They don't recognize God necessarily as king. They're living in a land where they didn't get rid of everybody that was there. So they have all this stuff going around. How do you think this is going to be affecting people who are seeking God? Exactly. You could have a situation where people say, I go to the temple with a pair of bullies. every year, and they take the best before I give it to God. God's not there. Why am I going? As if anybody needed a reason. You know, the false gods were there, and there they had food. You didn't have to bring it. They had food. They had prostitutes. They had wine. They had all kinds of party at all the other false gods, right? And then you've got to go to Shiloh, where you've got to go up against these two bullies that just give you a bad time all the way down. Can you kind of see how that's setting people up to fall by the way things are at the temple? This is a horrible situation. You know, it'd be like having the leadership here. Every time somebody came in, they'd browbeat them. How many people would keep coming? Probably nobody. Or very few. So there's... Well, there, you know, I've been to churches where, you know, people ridicule you because they don't like, you know, you shouldn't wear stripes, or, you know, you shouldn't wear this, or you should wear this, or like that. And that doesn't cause any growth, whether it's in numbers or whether it's in spirit. And certainly there's no spiritual growth. It certainly is hampered here because of the two sons of Eli. You going to say something, Jim? No? So, you can kind of see, whenever Israel falls into this state, what do they need? They need a judge to bring them back. Well, normally the other country provided the spanking, but they need a judge to bring them back to God. And these two boys aren't it. Now Samuel was ministering with the Lord as a boy wearing a linen ephod. And his brother would make him a little robe, and bring it to him from year to year when she would come up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. Then Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, "May the Lord give you children from this woman in place of the one she dedicated to the Lord." And they went to their own home. The Lord visited Hannah, and she conceived and gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters. And the boy Samuel grew before the Lord. So, how engaged is Samuel? What a contrast. What a contrast. How do you think Eli values Samuel? Huh? You can kind of see why. He's ministering for the God. He's got an ephod. What's an ephod? It's a priestly garment. Okay. He's a boy. He's ministering before the Lord as a boy. He has grown considerably, and Eli is using him quite a bit. And Eli's gotten old by now, okay? So he may be 10, he may be 14. If he's 14, he's probably been old enough to be considered a man, but he's somewhere in that age range. Eli is really old. He was pretty old when he got there when he was 2 or 3, but he's really old now. How had Hannah maintained her connection?
Each year she came to worship, she'd bring him a cloak.
Every year when she came, she brought a robe with him, which means that before she was coming, she was looking forward to it. She had to sew this and put it all together. She was thinking about her son. It was up there. Okay? She was putting it together, and when she got there, she got to visit with him. What was going on the past year, and give him his robe and everything like that. How did Eli show his appreciation? A what?
He blessed her.
This isn't just an empty, "I hope this happens." This is a blessing that the priest of God at Shiloh gave to Hannah. Because of her sacrifice, he said, you have more children. Now Eli was very old, and he heard all this his sons were doing Israel, and how they lay with the women who served at the doorway of the tent meeting. He said to them, why do you do such things? The evil things that I hear from all these people. No, my sons, for the report is not good which I hear the Lord's people circulating. If one man sins against another, God will mediate for him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him? But they would not listen to the voice of their father, for the Lord desired to put them to death. Now the boy Samuel was growing in stature and in favor both with the Lord and with men. Pretty strong contrast here between the two. So how rotten were these two boys? If you're talking about an apple, it would be to the core. Okay? They were extortionists, they were predators. Well, yeah, he had to hear it from everybody else. I mean, it's like, do you pay attention to anything that's going on? Evidently, Eli didn't, for whatever reason. So he had two bad kids. He's made a critical point with them as far as their evil. He says, you didn't sin against men. What's his critical point?
Sin against God.
Sin against God. Okay? That's the critical point. They prevented people that want to come worship God from worshiping God. You've sinned against God because you've gotten in the way of people seeking Him. There's no mediation. There's no hope for you almost because there's nobody to mediate. And they just kind of go, huh, God's not going to do anything. With the response, they ignored him. He said, we're going to keep doing it. We can, so we will. How had the perception of going to the tabernacle changed because of Samuel? It was an ugly event every year. You had to go up there to go see Eli's sons. What were they going to do this year? How had it changed because of Samuel? Here you have this young man, maybe 14, 15 by now, and he's now ministering. How do you think he's doing with the sacrifices? He's doing it the way they want it to be done. He's helping the people come to God, which is why Samuel's so significant. He's helping them to come to God. The people are growing in strength. They're allowed to worship. They're allowed to grow closer to God and commune with Him.
Samuel was growing in the stature and favor of both God and man.
That's right.
Just like Christ.
Yep.
He was a young God.
Statue and like Christ. Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord before Eli. And word from the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were infrequent. It happened at that time, as Eli was lying down in his place, now his eyesight had begun to grow dim, and he could not see well, and the lamp of God had not yet gone out. And Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was, that the Lord called Samuel, and he said, here I am. So, how much had God talked with Israel during Eli's life? You're doing real well. How much communication had they had?
Not a whole lot, right? Maybe not since Joshua.
Not much. Not much at all. Okay. From what says here, probably none at this particular time. There'd been no communication from God to the people.
Was there any other judges that there was verbal messages from? I mean, we saw
Yeah, there was some in some of the other judges where they said, go do this or go do that, but I'd have to look it up. It was very, very thin. Very, very thin. The last time I can remember say, go do this, and he goes and does this, and go not do this, and he did not do that.
Certainly and hundreds of years have passed since that time, because they were very well established here.
Yeah. They were very well established at Shiloh, yeah. Well, where's the lamp that they're talking about? This is easy. Where's the lamp at? Where's the lampstand?
In the holy place in the temple.
In the holy place. Where's the ark?
The holy of holies.
The holy of holies. Okay. I think that's how you spell holies. It didn't put a red line under it. What separated it?
A veil.
A veil. Okay. Pretty significant, isn't it? On the day Christ died, remember it was ripped? It was ripped in a way that it was unnatural. Who called Samuel and from where?
Samuel called Moses from a burning bush. It didn't burn.
It didn't burn. It wasn't consumed. Who called Samuel?
God.
God. From where?
Behind the curtain.
Behind the curtain, where? Holy of Holies. And where in the Holy of Holies? Huh?
Mercy seat.
The ark. And where on the ark?
On the mercy
seat. On the mercy seat. Thank you. We got there. Isn't that where God spoke at this time? In the mercy seat? That was easy. Then he ran to Eli and said, here I am, for you called me. But he said, I did not call you. Lie down again. So he went and lay down. The Lord called yet again, Samuel. So Samuel arose, went to Eli and said, here I am, for you called me. But he answered, I did not call my son. Lie down again. Now Samuel did not know the Lord, nor had the word of the Lord yet been revealed to him. So you have a little going on here. Somewhere in the temple area is Eli. Probably not in the holy place, because that's where... Who's in the holy place? Who's laying down there? Samuel. That's where he's at. He's in the area where the lamp is. Somewhere in the temple area is Eli. So what you have going on is the Lord's calling him, and he's going to Eli and say, okay, here I am. What do you need? Because Eli is very old at this time. Okay, so there could be a problem Eli had. So Samuel's going to be very attentive. So you see, you kind of see where they were going to go. So who did Samuel think was calling him?
Eli.
Yeah, it was Eli. Okay, he was sure it was Eli. God's not talked to him. He's never heard God. And Eli's response.
Go back to sleep. I didn't call you.
Go back to bed, would you? Okay. Just go back to bed. Quit waking me up. And he does. Samuel's a good young man, a godly young man. And he goes back. The second time. Who did Samuel think it was? Still Eli. He still can't figure out who it is. Eli again. Eli's second response. Go back to bed, please. You realize what it is? 2 o'clock in the morning? Just go back to bed. I didn't call you. You're hearing things. The final one. So the Lord called Samuel again for the third time. And he arose and went to Eli and said, here I am, for you called me. Then Eli discerned that the Lord was calling the boy. And Eli said to Samuel, go lie down, and it shall be if he calls you, that you shall say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. Eli's woke up. May not have been awake the first two times, but he's awake now, isn't he? He's figured out what's going on. Third time, who did Samuel think it was? Eli. Okay. What's different? Eli's the high priest, and he's figured it out. He's saying, I have never heard this in my entire life, but it's God that's talking to this young man. And he that's the big difference. He knew who was calling at this point. What did he do that was different than last time? Still tells him to go back to bed, right? But he gives him a little more instructions. Huh? He told him how to answer? Is that what you said? He told him what to answer. What? What did he answer? Well, yet a lot of the servants and a lot of the prophets, that was kind of their response. To answer, to say, I'm listening, Lord. What is it you want? What do you want to tell me? So this kind of sets up for next week. As far as what Eli did, basically asked God what he wanted. I'm listening. You called me, I'm listening. What do you want?
Actually, Eli introduces the communication that would take place between God and Samuel.
Throughout his whole life.
Yeah.
Throughout his whole life, this is where the communication started between Israel and God through Samuel. And he was in communication with God throughout his entire life. And Samuel's a pretty interesting guy because, as I remember, he never really had too much of a failing anywhere in his faith all the way through his life. I'd have to look, but he stayed closely aligned with God his entire life. Everything he did showed that he depended on God and he knew he could depend on God. And we'll begin to get into that, because the next part in this that we go into talks about the conversation that he and God have and how that begins to move Israel into the right direction as far as a nation following God. Because like I said, he's the one who installed the second king, first king being God, the second king with Saul, had to go following him in the baggage, and installed David, as anointed him as the next king. So this is significant with Samuel in his lifetime. Questions, comments? Yeah.
Well, you know, he had a benefit that is kind of subtle. He knew that his mother had given him up for a purpose, and I'm sure in their conversations she told him the history of his birth. So she was devoted to God, and he saw that example in her.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be something that Eli's sons did not experience. And so Samuel's relationship with God was actually formed maybe by his mother in a very, even though she wasn't there all the time, it was there.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Eli's desire to serve God. I think it was there. I just don't know how well he articulated it. But certainly the zeal that Hannah had for God, because you see that in her prayer. Samuel had to have picked up on that and understood that zeal and probably emulated it to some extent when he came to serve God. Any other comments? We got done early, which is good because my voice is running out. Thank you.